Good afternoon. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the rule. There is a quorum. Members, since we don't have all the people here yet, and there's a lot going on, I think I want to start on House File 3093, the bill authored by Representative Gunther, and we will jump in as we get more members, perhaps on the Hackbarth bill. So with that, Representative Gunther moves that House File 3093 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is the UI bill. The Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council is made up of four legislators, the Chamber of Commerce, NFIB, Association of Retail Merchants, AFL-CIO, UAW, Teamsters, Jobs Now Coalition, and it's a group that talks about all the issues that were very important in unemployment. We were out of the hole in our fund until March, and how are we doing now? Are we still in or out?
We are in $50 million right now. We'll be out of debt.
We're in debt for $50 million right now. We'll be out of debt by the end of the month. So it is recovering in a very fast pace, and it's ahead of projections. And with that, the significance of the UI bill is makes it easier for new labor market entrants to qualify for benefits, reduces the disincentive to work part-time while collecting benefits, exempt for denial with limitations individuals who quit work due to child care problems, increases the fraud and overpayment penalties, shortens the appeal time period, but requires all notices to specify the day of the week and the date to the appeal time period expires. Mm-hmm. Move longstanding administrative rules into statute, and numerous language changes to specify the statute and conform to the reviser of statute suggested language. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Any questions for Representative Gunther? Are there any amendments? See, Representative Solberg.
Let me ask one question. Has this been passed unanimously by all members of the Unemployment Commission?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Solberg, yes, it has.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gunther renews his motion that House File 3093 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you.
Next, I've got Representative Erickson for House File 2564.
You can't do this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson moves that House File 2564. I will move that House File 2564 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Erickson, tell us about House File 2564.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This bill exempts aid and attendance benefits from the United States Department of Veterans from being included in family income for purposes of Minnesota CARE eligibility. The aid and attendance benefit would still be counted as income for the individual receiving the benefit. I think most of you realize that when Minnesota CARE was created some years ago, that the language was somewhat vague. And so over the years, this has become a problem with the department, and finally we have decided to resolve this issue. The bill is not effective until 2009 to keep the cost at a minimum. So if you check the fiscal note, you will notice that in the fiscal year 09, it is $4,000. And that's it, Mr. Chair. I'll stand for questions.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, this is a, as I understand it, a benefit for people that could get on to Minnesota CARE. Is that correct?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, that's correct.
Well, with the cost of $4,000, to which department?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and committee, that is to DHS.
The chairman of the DHS isn't here, but it seems to me if it's a benefit, why were we postposing it till 2009? I mean, I can understand going out to the next biennium for 4,000, but I mean, you wouldn't even get me to complain about 4,000 in this biennium. I think the department could eat that.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Erickson.
The fiscal note was a little higher if it went into effect immediately because of the qualifications, the eligibility. So in Health and Human Services, it was the recommendation of Representative Bradley that we push it to the out years. It's not retroactive anyway. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Fulbert,
can I ask what the TAIL is going to be then in 2010 with the first fiscal note that you had?
Mr. Chair and Representative Fulbert, probably zero.
Mr. Marks, do you have something to enlighten us with on this?
Mr. Chair and members, the complicating issue here is the Department of Human Services implementing their Health Match program, their data matching program. The initial fiscal note showed a $400,000 cost in fiscal 07 if this was initiated or implemented immediately. By delaying the effective date until after DHS has Health Match in place, it takes away the programming costs associated with Health Match. The cost in fiscal 2010 and beyond is probably $4,000 or so as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Representative Clark.
I'm sorry, I missed part of what you said, and I just wanted to hear what you said. Until that comes into place, it would have been...
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, it's the implementation of the Health Match program that DHS is putting in place. If it went into effect immediately, it would require manual programming of Health Match until the Health Match program was in place. By delaying the effective date until after Health Match is in place, then that program is in place and this can be automatically programmed in.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
So is the cost, the fiscal note here has to do with the processing, right? It doesn't have to do with increased costs to Minnesota Care. Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, the cost shown here in this fiscal note is essentially... because there would be more, or the veterans' benefits would be excluded, there would be slightly more eligibility. So this is an ongoing cost to the Health Care Access Fund because there would be more, either more eligibility or eligibility for more benefits. The initial fiscal note for the bill as it was considered in the Health Committee showed a $400,000 cost in 2007. That was programming cost. That programming cost has been removed by delaying the effective date.
Mr. Chairman, maybe this is a...
Representative
Clark. This question is for... I support your bill. I think what you're doing is important. We should probably be doing it for a number of different groups like this. But what I don't understand is we are going to be increasing eligibility, therefore there will be more Minnesota Care costs. Are those Minnesota Care costs not included in the fiscal note for some reason? I just don't understand why that would be, because that could be quite significant, I would guess. It would be people who are excluded from Minnesota Care unless we pass this. And so are you counting... Who's... tracking that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, that is the $4,000 cost that the fiscal note is showing. Department of Human Services estimate is that it is only $4,000.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark?
That's hardly, you know, a couple months worth of subscription drugs for some of our veterans. I'm trying to understand how many people are we helping here?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, if on page 2 of the fiscal note, there's a two-thirds of the way down the page, there's language based on the average benefit of $600 per month. We anticipate the average Minnesota Care premium would be reduced by an average of $45 a month for most affected cases. There may be other information here as well.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe what I am hearing you say then is we're talking about payment on the premium for Minnesota Care rather than the services that would be. So if we have someone go in the hospital, of course, $4,000 would last about 15 minutes. But we're talking about the
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I believe so. I believe it is the premium reduce.
Okay. Well, that's very worthwhile. I just couldn't quite figure out why it would be $4,000 if we're actually spending more money for Minnesota Care.
Other discussion to House File 2564. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, correct me if I'm in error, what is the date when this will take place?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dempsey, it's effective January 1 of 2009.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you. Why? Why do we wait that long?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dempsey, I think Mr. Marks gave an excellent explanation, but it's because the department is working on a match program, and if we'd have made it effective immediately, it would have been a $400,000 cost to the department, and by 2009, the program will be in place.
Well, would you Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erickson, Representative Dempsey.
Representative Erickson, had you thought about maybe accepting an amendment to the bill that would make it sooner than 2009?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dempsey, not without finding a revenue stream, I could not. And I don't have a revenue stream.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I have some help from, Mr. Chair, could I have some help from our...
Go ahead, Representative.
Our financial expert.
Okay. Do you have a question for Mr. Marks, Representative Dempsey?
Yes. Might there be a revenue stream that we are not aware of that could have this going to sooner?
Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dempsey, the issue becomes one of if it's implemented sooner, the Department of Human Services has significantly more programming costs associated with it. Okay. The bill was originally introduced with an earlier effective date, uh-huh. and it was changed in the Health Policy and Finance Committee because it showed a $400,000 cost to implement it sooner. This effective date allows the department to get their data program, their health match program, into place first, and then the programming cost for health match is removed by having that program in place first before implementing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2564 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, let's see. Oh, just a minute. Let's take up Representative Biskin's bill. Okay. Representative Biskin's House File 3380. I see the state auditor is here. Yeah, he's in the back. Representative Biskin's moves that House File 3380 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, House File 3380 allows political subdivisions to deposit money into trusts maintained by the Public Employees Retirement Association through SBI to pay for currently unfunded post-retirement benefits. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the reason this bill is before this committee is on the back page of the fiscal note, on page 2 of the fiscal note, there is a sentence in that paragraph that says PARA's ongoing administration expenses will depend on the number of entities that take advantage of this legislation but are not expected to exceed $10,000 per year. Members of this committee, Mr. Chairman, the state auditor is here. She does have a plan for how they will either absorb or recoup these costs. Mr. Chairman, she can either nod and say yes, she does have a plan for the sake of the committee, or if it be your pleasure, she can come and testify before the committee.
Representative Stolberg.
Mr. Chair, a nod is fine as long as the nod is noted.
The nod is noted. Discussion to House File 3390. Or 3380, excuse me. Seeing no discussion. Representative Biskins renews his motion that House File 3380 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Now we've got Representative Bruce Anderson. Representative Anderson, come forward.
Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Anderson. The chair will move that House File 3390 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 3390 is a bill brought to me by individuals from the St. Cloud State area, your area, Mr. Chairman. They were not able to get here to testify on behalf of this bill, but they have individuals who work in the St. Cloud State system as professors and other situations that have been called to active duty service for their country. In the classic sense was to help out with Hurricane Katrina. They're an ongoing situation where they are state employees and they get called up to help out with the relief efforts down at Hurricane Katrina and other places. The specific example that was given during committee the last two times that this bill has been heard was a professor who was called to do who's an undertaker, and he's down there to try and help out with setting up a morgue and doing all the different things that were necessary to meet the requirements of the Homeland Security and other situations. And so his pay had been reduced greatly from the fact that he was getting paid as a professor in the state university system compared to what he was getting paid as a volunteer, or I should say as a active duty person helping out with Hurricane Katrina. He also lost all of his health benefits and any benefits that were available to him while being in a state employee status. He lost all those, and his family lost all those benefits too. So what he's asking for is that if a person who is in a state employee status gets called to active duty with the U.S. Armed Forces, whether it's the Marines or Air Force or, in this case, the National Guard, that they be compensated for their service while on active duty in those situations where they're needed. And basically, there are specialty types of service that's required. The military itself does not have these services available. And with that, I'd leave it up to the members. There was a fiscal note that was brought back from Employee Relations and Military Affairs Department. They show no financial cost. The finance department had no financial implications there. And unless Mr. Marks has got something that I'm not aware of, that's what I basically know right now as far as the fiscal impact to reimbursing these people for who get called into active duty service.
Representative Anderson, is it anticipated that any additional reimbursement will just come from the budget of whatever agency they're affiliated with?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not aware of that, but it sounds like from the looking at the fiscal note that they might be absorbing that type situation. So unless there's something different, I'm not aware of it.
Discussion to House File 3390. Representative Clark.
So this would also cover their health insurance. They'd be, the problem that this individual had, he'd be able to have, would have been able to have had his own and his family's health insurance continued. Is that what you're
saying? Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, that's correct.
So I'm just wondering, are we going to be helping? Thank you. Are we going to be helping this individual and others who were harmed? I mean, in other words, is this retroactive that at all, or did you not want to do that?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, it's not retroactive. It's right now. It goes into effect July 1 of this year. Unless you have concerns about that. I think what the concern was that he doesn't want to see other members of his state employee status get called to active duty or situations like this, and he himself might get called back because he is an undertaker or has those services to provide, that he would be in a situation where he'd lose those benefits, and that's, I think he's looking forward rather than backward.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
Sometimes we try to make people whole who have been harmed inadvertently by what we think is not a correct action by an agency. So I don't even have in this bill, but maybe you could consider an amendment for the floor that would assist those who were harmed by this agency action. And then I guess we'd have to go back and do a fiscal note on that. Anyway, it just seems like that would be the just thing to do.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Representative Clark, I will check with the people who gave me the fiscal notes and see what kind of impact that would have going retroactive back to last fall. I'm not sure exactly the date of service. I think it was in 2005, in the spring of 2005, that this happened to him. And so kind of, it would have been great for him to be able to come in with a bill last year at that time, but it was a little late one because his service didn't end until like in August. So it was kind of after the fact that it took place. But also what the departments have to say about putting in some kind of amendment related to that.
Well, the other thing is we have the claims bill coming up, and that may be, another place on the floor where you could think about amending it. It just seems that we shouldn't just let it go.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I'll look into it and see what kind of response I get from the departments.
Any other discussion of House File 3390? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me a little more about what the uniform services are? I'm a little confused about who else we're including in this category. The Mission Corps of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I don't know what that means. Are they officers in the reserve or someone in the reserve in those services or what?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, these are people who would be considered in a federal employee type situation where they are a reserve, or they're a component of a situation where the national government could call, or federal government could call them in because of their specialty, work, occupation, whatever they have had in their past. And we're trying to cover all the bases so that these people that might be in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration might be called into the service, whether it's the National Guard or the Coast Guard, whatever the situation, just so that they are included and being recognized for their services to our country.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hart.
Are they then, do they hold ranks, or are they just something called Commissioned Corps? I mean, do they hold lieutenants, sergeants, all that stuff, or...
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, the gentleman that was called in to be an undertaker at Katrina, well, had the rank of a major in the National Guard. He had his degree, a master's degree. So officer in the National Guard, that's where they placed him in, and he was working with the local National Guard in Katrina down in New Orleans.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then these, when it says commissions, it actually means commission as we generally think of someone who has a commission in the armed forces?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? House File 3390. Seeing no further discussion, the Chair renews motion that House File 3390 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, the bill is passed. Representative Anderson, you can just stay up there and we'll take another bill. Chair will move that House File 3995 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Members, this is the claims bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3995 is the claims bill. We had a claims hearing back earlier part of March to discuss issues that have dealt with people that have brought forward concerns that they felt the state had not properly reimbursed them or properly didn't take care of their financial needs. And I have with me today Mr. Lindeke from the House to talk to us about the different claims that were there. Plus, we also have an amendment that was brought forward by Representative Rukavina to discuss at a later time.
Mr. Lindeke, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Craig Lindeke, not actually from the House, but from the Reviser of Statutes Office. The bill this year is a fairly simple bill. The only claims that the Claims Subcommittee recommends to be paid are claims that are through the Department of Corrections. The bulk of them, I believe, are people who were doing sentencing to service work and were injured, and many of them are for the medical expenses related to their injuries, and those, by the way, are paid at the medical assistance rates, not the full bill received from a hospital or from the ambulance or from anybody else, but at the medical assistance rates, which is a remarkably lower number. And then if they've been permanently injured, to the extent that they have a permanent partial disability under the workers' compensation scheme, we've also paid, recommend to be paid that, the permanent partial disability. And there are several of them who were actually injured while they were incarcerated. So these are all through the Department of Corrections this year.
Okay. Discussion to the claims bill. Any discussion on the claims bill? Representative Clark.
I'm just looking this over. It looks like being sentenced to perform sentence to service work is dangerous. I mean, what kind of injuries are we talking about here?
Well, Mr.
Lindeke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, there are a number of different injuries. We had one fellow who fell backwards off a ladder while he was doing something and injured himself, hurt his back. But the one that the two that stick out in my mind this year, because we actually had then a corrections official discuss with us the training that they give to the counties when they do sentencing to serve. The two that stick out for me were log splitters. Apparently these people are out routinely splitting logs as part of their sentencing to service work. And it turns out to be a very a very difficult thing. Mr. Rukavina
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina, are you one of these claims?
I'm guilty to show how he split.
Yeah.
What?
No.
But the department did explain, Representative Clark, that they do active training for the counties that have sentencing to service workers and community work service people. And, of course, that can't guarantee there won't be injuries, and there is sometimes dangerous work involved.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Well, in these counties, Scott County, Martin County, Waseca County, I'm looking at these $4,000, $6,000, $3,000 bills in Yellow Medicine County, Douglas County, Washington County. I mean, Itasca County. Are these folks, are these places where they are getting training? And if so, do you think there's room for improvement here and prevention? It just seems like, I don't know what the log splitting result is. Are people losing fingers? Are they cutting off toes? Somebody fell off a ladder. I can understand that. Maybe it would be hard to prevent. But some of the other things, is there new prevention training happening in these?
Mr. Chair, I'm
Mr. Lindeke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, my understanding from the department is that they do training every year, that they do additional training for these counties. Whether they get to every county every year, I can't testify to that. But the impression I get is that there is an ongoing training program for these counties. And the reason why the state winds up being liable for these expenses through the claims bill is to encourage counties to put people out in sentencing to service work and community work service rather than putting them in the jails. Because it's perceived to be a better use of people's time for the kinds of things that they get sentenced for the crimes that they've committed. And that the counties probably wouldn't have them out there if the counties were going to have to be liable for the injuries.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
I don't have any dispute with the claims or helping out. I mean, I think we should absolutely pay these. My question is just I'm a little surprised at the level of injury that's happening, and I'm just wondering if there can't be better prevention, and maybe we could just ask for some sort of report from these counties on what they're actually doing. And I'm not on the committee that looks at the corrections issues, but it seemed kind of serious, so that's my comment. Maybe the author could...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark. We asked the same question of the corrections people as they came and brought their claims to us, and then they had a professional person at kind of the higher up within corrections to come and speak to us at claims committee about their training that they do for us. So they're concerned as much as we are about this, and they want to continue to see it decline, but it's... And we had, it's been quite some time since we had heard claims, so it kind of has a backlog of claims that all of a sudden showed up with Mr. Lindeke having set up for a couple, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So it was a little bit of a backlog of claims that were brought forward. But, Mr. Chairman, we do have an amendment that Representative Rukavina wanted to bring forward, so I guess I'll let him speak to the amendment that he wants to add to the bill.
Oh, all right. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, first of all, I tried to come by to talk to Representative Anderson this morning, and I apologize, Representative Anderson, for the lateness, but I did submit this claim to the Claims Committee in December, and the Claims Committee asked for an opinion from the Department of Public Safety, and they did not send the letter back until March 21st, which was after your meeting where people can come in front of and present their case. So, members, here's the case that I have and what the amendment does. I am a constituent that moved back to Embarrass, Minnesota here last year after being a career military soldier for 20 years. As a young kid, when he first entered the military, he got a DWI in Florida. He paid all his fines and fees down there. I had a Minnesota license. They took the license away for a specified amount of time. His Minnesota license expired, so he just applied for a Florida license because he was now a Florida resident. He was going to be stationed in Florida for many years. After that, they moved him up to the state of Virginia. He got a license there. 20 years, honorable soldier. Comes back to Minnesota last year, goes and applies for a job at North Shore Mining Company in Babbitt, and is told that he doesn't have a valid license. For 20 years, he's had licenses in two states, but all of a sudden, he comes back, he has no valid license. And he asks why, and they said, well, you never paid, reinstated your license back in 1985. He said, I never got a letter. Well, the lady said, well, that's too bad, it's $680. If you had paid in 1986 when you had done this, it would have been $150, but too bad. So, you know, I get a lot of phone calls about DWI. So I called Commissioner Campion, and I said, hey, Mike, this is one you actually can do. For once, you can actually give somebody a break. He called me back and said, no, I can't. So I put in this claim last December. I think it's, you know, if we can give money to sentence to serve people and that, I think we can reimburse the guy who's been in the military for 20 years, has been a good, hard-working citizen, comes back through no fault of his own, didn't do this, because he would have, because he paid all of his other fees and fines in Florida, and I thought it could be done through public safety, but they couldn't do it. So what it does is it pays the difference between what he would have paid in 1986 versus what he had to pay to this cottage industry that we have going today in 2006.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, the rules that were written on July 14th, 2000, I've got the rules here for the Claims Committee, says on Rule 8, a claim received after November 1st will not be considered or paid by the subcommittee during the following year's legislative session, but will instead be held over for consideration and payment in the year after that session. So you filed this in December. That's probably why we didn't get a chance to hear it this year, because it didn't meet the November 1st deadline of the previous year. So that's one reason, just to let you know, that we didn't take it up.
Well,
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, you know, this guy, I guess, didn't get to me and I until this time, and I submitted it, but, you know, you don't have to go by the rules. We write the rules here at the table. So, you know, I would hope that you guys could compensate him for what I think is really something that he should be compensated for.
Representative Anderson, do you know, or Mr. Lindeke, have we done anything like this in the past for other people in other claims bills?
Mr. Chair, in my years on the claims subcommittee, which I'm getting rather long of tooth on the claims subcommittee now, I've been there quite a while, I remember one instance where in the Senate, not in the House, a claim was added to the claims bill that had not been considered by the claims subcommittee. It's never happened to my knowledge in the House, and it was that one instance of paying somebody the sales tax on his airplane that he used for crop dusting or something. Senator Stump or somebody added it to the bill, and that was probably 10 years ago. There's been one instance of something like this. There have been several instances when Ways and Means and other committees have taken claims out of the bill, but putting one in has never happened in the House.
Other discussion to Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, we in the Subcommittee of Claims did not have any type of input from the Corrections Department, and it'd be nice to even have something here, or public safety, I should say, to at least address this issue. We've not had any yay or nay on how they feel about this, and so because it didn't meet the November 1 deadline, we didn't include it in our sack of bills that he heard this year. So I feel rather uneasy about accepting this because of the fact that we've not heard from public safety as to how they would look at this. So Mr. Rukavina has got something different to say, but that's my concern right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Anderson, there is a response to the Claims Committee from Public Safety dated March 21st saying that they sent a letter to his home, but he wasn't living in Embarrass, Minnesota, and his parents obviously didn't forward it because this guy, I mean, this gentleman is extremely nice. He even calls me sir on the telephone, and I told him not to call me sir, you know, but he still does because he's been a career soldier, very polite, and I believe him when he tells me he never got notification. Because he paid all of his other fines and everything in Florida. So their letter says he was a Minnesota resident. So the notice was mailed by first class to the address on the file, which was his parents' home. And he never got it. And they did respond on March 21st after all your other, you know, deadlines had been there. So, Mr. Chair, members, you know, the Senate set a precedent. We shouldn't let the senators get away with that. We should, you know, also do what they did. And if they did it once, we get to do it once. I think this is a reasonable request, and I'd appreciate your support.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Rukavina 1465 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, members.
Any other discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 3995, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Next, we'll bring back Representative Hackbart.
What's the number of this bill, Mr. Chair?
Senate File 2734. The chair will move that Senate File 2734, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. And Representative Hackbart, you've got your decoy up there now. Maybe that'll bring you better luck in this committee than you had in the Tax Committee. Maybe we can get you out of here in 2 days as opposed to 3 days like you had in the Tax Committee. So, members, for those who weren't here, we concluded talking about this bill at 10 o'clock last night. I felt that it was getting late enough that it was time to recess and take it up in the morning, so we have the bill back before us. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed there's lots of members missing. I just don't know what your intent here is in terms of moving the bill out of here. If you want to do that by noon, I think that we need a few minutes to get some folks in the room. So.
But I was hoping, that's why I didn't take it up right away, Representative Kelleher,
yeah,
as I was
people now.
Hoping, well, I was hoping that we would be able to have more people come as the meeting went on as opposed to fewer people come. I know that there was at least one other amendment that we had. We're through the rest of our schedule, and I know that people have a lot of other committee meetings today with it being deadline days. So I suspect there will be some discussion and that people should maybe, you know, try to get members in here.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, we'll work on it. I just would appreciate that if we were going to take a vote, we wait a few moments because I think all of our members are in the building. We just need to get them here.
Okay. All right, Representative Hackbarth. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We had just had a vote on the A2 amendment, I believe, last night, that was defeated on a tie vote. Representative Hackbarth, I don't know if you've got any comments you want to make at this point since we're starting out again. Otherwise, the floor is open for amendments.
I am set to go, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Okay, members, are there any amendments? There was,
Mr. Chair,
a Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to reconsider the A2 amendment.
You'd like to move to reconsider the A2 amendment. Yes. All right. Representative Hilty moves to reconsider the A2 amendment, which was the amendment that was defeated shortly before we left here this last evening. And Representative Hilty, can you just briefly describe the amendment so people remember what it is? And
well, Mr. Chair, that is the amendment that both increased the provision on the sales tax from 3/16 to 3/8 of 1%, which is under this amendment still a liability in the current revenues. It does not add to the revenues. It simply subtracts from current revenue, and it does include a number of other recipients of those revenues from what was included in the original bill.
Okay, so the A2 amendment does not have the sales tax increase, but does increase the amount of money dedicated to 3/8 of a percent and includes the arts, public broadcasting, if I remember correctly, and a number of other uses that were not in the original bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and there was some question about how those funds are allocated. I think there may have been some misunderstanding about that, and that's one reason that I think that we should reconsider the bill or the amendment.
Representative Solberg. Okay, a roll call is requested on the motion to reconsider the A2 amendment. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some additional copies of the bill if someone doesn't have them. And the reason I thought we ought to hear from my reconsideration motion is I've got a spreadsheet here on the 3/8 and the 34%, the 22%, 22%, and the 22%. So that explains it a little better maybe than I could do waving my pencil around last night.
Okay. Any other discussion to the motion to reconsider? Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I want to thank Representative Hilty for the motion to reconsider. I think that last night we were all getting a little tired, and we needed to have a more full discussion of this amendment and the positive things this can do. I know that this is not people's favorite way to finance important state issues, but I do think it is a tool that's been made available to us that is critical for our natural resources as well as for other arts and cultural institutions, and I think it would be a prudent thing to do to reconsider the vote.
Okay, members, I guess recall that the motion to reconsider is non-debatable, so let's vote on that motion, and then if it passes, we can discuss the amendment again. There has been a roll call on the motion to reconsider. Clerk,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Riccobino.
Just a clarification. So if I want this to come up, then I vote yes or I vote no?
If you want to vote on the A2 amendment again, you would vote yes. If you do not want to vote on the A2 amendment again, you would vote no.
And so, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rookamino.
Mr. Chair, we can't talk about this before, but I can keep talking until we get a few members more in the room.
Yeah.
Can I just keep doing that for a little while, babble about something?
I'm tempted to make some other comments about your other discussion, Representative Rookamino, but...
pull your notes out.
Representative Rookamino, do you have another parliamentary inquiry?
I've got a whole pocket full of them. Ready to vote now.
Clerk will call the roll.
Mount Black?
No.
Dempsey?
No.
Abler? Abrams?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
No.
Bradley? Diskins?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Dorman?
Dorman. Affirmative.
Doyne?
Carmel.
Yes.
You want to be?
Earhart?
Yes.
Bradley?
Bradley.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Lindsay?
No.
Pinky?
No.
Larson? Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara? Nornis?
Yes.
Wotremba? Osmet?
Yes.
Pimer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yep.
Ruth?
No. No.
Seifert?
No.
Smith?
Yes.
Silbert?
Yes.
Sikora?
Pass.
Vandeveer?
Pass.
Pass.
Okay, sorry. Virginius?
No.
Walker?
Yes.
Otremba.
Otremba?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Abler? Bradley? Larson? McNamara? Sikora?
No.
And Vandeveer?
No.
That's arm twisting going on?
No.
20 to 14.
There being 20 ayes and 14 nays, the motion to reconsider the vote is adopted. So, members, now we have the A2 amendment back before us. Discussion to the A2 amendment. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I didn't have the opportunity to look at this last night as I had to leave, but I do have a handout that's coming around to members. I had the fiscal analysis department take a look at the language that the Senate had, and I believe this is reflective of that, in terms of what would the increase in funding be if this were to be adopted by the legislature and also by the voters. And I don't know that members even realize what they're voting on in terms of increases when they're voting for this stuff, but if you take a look at the chart on the Arts, Humanities, Museum, and Public Broadcasting Fund side of the sheet, you will notice the percentage of increases vastly outstripping the growth of personal income. And I realize that it is the goal of some legislators to have government grow exponentially larger than personal incomes. That's not my goal. It's not why the people of Lyon and Redwood County sent me here. It was to keep government at or below the growth level of people's personal income. Now, maybe there's some people in the room who have 170% increases in their personal family budget or 570% increases in their family budget or 188% increases in their family budget or 440% increases in their family budget. But that sure didn't happen to me, and it sure doesn't happen to the people back in my district. And it would be nice if people actually knew what they were voting on instead of just some concept of, yes, I support the arts, or yes, I support children's museums, or whatever stuff that's floated around in here. But now that you have some detail as to what you're voting on, I would caution members that I honestly think if we had truth in advertising, there would be some more cautionary aspects taken as to what we're doing here. We as a committee scrutinize some, not all, of the budget areas. One of them that we scrutinize is public broadcasting, as members know. And yesterday we voted to give public TV more money. And our budget, our committee found the money to give public TV more money. And I think they're grateful for that. But to put it in the Minnesota Constitution that we are going to fund all these various things, what planet are we living on that we're going to put this in the Constitution, that we're going to fund all these various areas and put them on autopilot and give them these types of increases while K-12 is getting what kind of increase, Representative Greiling, 4% last year? And we're going to give the percentage of increases, Representative Earhart, of transportation is what, maybe in the negative area because the gas tax revenues are probably heading backwards. And I'm not sure where higher ed is, Representative Norris, but we have most of the finance, we have most of the committee chairs and ranking members sitting in the room. And if you were to go around the streets of my area, maybe not along, you know, some of your districts, but in my district, and ask the people of these towns, Ghent or Ballaton or what have you, you know, how fast did your income grow, and what are your top priorities for funding? And I would be willing to bet that their income did not grow by these percentages, and I'd also be willing to bet that all of these would not show up in the top 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of their issue areas for putting in the Constitution for automatic funding. And I may be out of touch with my district on some things. I'm just not thinking that I am on this. I've asked a lot of questions at town meetings. I've asked a lot of questions through surveys. And I'm not sensing that there's an overwhelming demand by the people for this if they actually knew what they were getting. And certainly people opposed to this would get outspent exponentially on the ballot. So people say, well, let the people decide. You think this is going to show up on the ballot, these types of increases and percentages and budget numbers? I don't think so. Now, let me draw your attention to the second page of my handout, which is the appropriations that we give to the Department of Finance budget booklet last year and the compensations of top office holders that are reported to the Attorney General's office. And then you tell me whether some of these organizations are starving and whether they deserve to be put into the Minnesota Constitution as opposed to K-12, as opposed to transportation, as opposed to higher ed, as opposed to early childhood. The list goes on and on. So truth in advertising, members, I just want to give a couple little pieces of information for you before you vote. And you might have the votes to put it in today, but we'll have a series of discussions on the floor about this later if it goes in. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, I'm informed that there is a drafting error on the amendment and that on page 1, line 3, it should be delete Article 1 and Article 2. So if we could make that incorporation, if that's okay with Representative Hilty Earhart. Well, Representative Hilty, are you offering this amendment?
Okay,
we go back to Representative Earhart.
Would you repeat that again, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I'm told that we have a technical correction that we need to delete on page 1, line 3, it needs to read delete Article 1 and Article 2 and insert.
Okay.
So is that okay with you, Representative Earhart?
Yes, can you okay. Incorporate that?
All right. Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I stated last night, probably the most important thing in this amendment is the clean water legacy. And we do need to bite the bullet somehow. As I stated last night, the governor had recommended $20 million to start that process. The Senate does have that in their target. The House, I think, has, I don't, they may have it in their target, but there is down to $6 million altogether. And for the entire Mississippi watershed, this is an extremely important measure that that we get some way to fund this in a long-term basis. It is one that is probably going to stop a lot of economic development in the entire state, so I strongly support that addition.
Okay, discussion to the A2 amendment.
A roll call on the A2 amendment, please.
Roll call requested on the A2 amendment. Any other discussion on the A2 amendment as amended? Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert, you know, you aren't doing this to the people in your district, Representative. They'd be doing it to themselves. If given the opportunity, they have the right to vote one way or the other. And I suppose if you told them all that that's why we put the constitutional amendments on the ballot. And, you know, I don't really know what to say about these top compensation, total compensation top office holders. That happens to be what it takes to maintain the people and recruit the people that they need, the top people, when they compete. They don't, you know, the Society of Fine Arts doesn't go down to the local drugstore and see if the clerk down there would like to be head of the Society of Fine Arts. They recruit nationwide, as do a lot of the other folks here that you see getting these big salaries. And that's what the competitive price is for going in. It's the same argument that you probably don't have anybody in your town except one that makes $584,000 a year. And maybe some of his executives make some of these other figures on here, and that's what they get paid for doing their job.
So we should
say that's a fallacious argument. If you don't make that kind of money, I can't help it. So don't be jealous of somebody that does. Get into the fine arts business and see if you can be recruited by one of these people. I mean, that would be the answer to that dilemma.
And then pay taxes.
Representative Seifert, since that's directed at you, do you want to respond?
Well, I am not sure yet.
Oh, I thought you were.
I have another.
Let him finish.
Mr. Chairman, we also have this problem. When I got here in 91, the state budget was about $13, $14 billion. I made a remark that our budget keeps growing right along with the income to the state, about $1 billion a year, and that's what it boils down to. We're now 16 years later, and we've got a $30 billion budget and income. So that's what's happened to the world. And if it isn't happening in Marshall, I can't help you. So go ahead and reply.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, it's just an FYI for members so that they understand when people come and say we're starving for money and we have to have a constitutional amendment, people know what they're voting for. And I would agree, my populist nature of Western Minnesota is that a lot of people sick and sick at the corn dog plants at Schwann's don't want to pay more money in sales taxes to pay for someone who's making exponentially more than they will in a lifetime. So that's not going to be on the ballot, Mr. Chair. They aren't going to have that information unless someone like me goes around the state and gives all this information out, and I don't have that much time in my schedule this summer. So I'll just let the members vote.
I have Representative Abrams, Dornis, and Kelleher. Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Speaker and members, I'm going to be voting against the amendment, but I want to correct some misinformation or perhaps provide some additional information about the Minnesota Orchestral Association, the Guthrie Theater Foundation. I've served on the board of the Minnesota Orchestral Association, and I'm currently on the board of the Guthrie Theater Foundation. Additionally, I did serve on the Employment Committee with the Minnesota Orchestral Association and have had the opportunity to review compensation of the top compensated people at the orchestra as well as to compare them to comparables throughout the country. It is my judgment, based upon hours of examination, that the top people at the Minnesota Orchestral Association are in the bottom quartile of pay for similar positions throughout the country. Additionally, even though I don't serve on the compensation committee of the Guthrie Theater, I do serve on the finance committee, and I do serve on the investment committee, and have reviewed top salaries of the people at the Guthrie. And again, I would say that for comparables, they are paid in the bottom half in the country. Now, I agree with Representative Sober that clean water initiative may be one worth looking at. I'm just uncomfortable with the entire notion of placing any of these into the Constitution. I think that it is a path that we will regret. It will be a well-worn path if, in fact, this makes its way through the legislature on the ballot and are successful. And I would hope that people would join me with their no vote, not on the basis that people are being overcompensated, but rather that it's bad policy. And one more point about the orchestra and the Guthrie. The orchestra, I believe, has free tickets to for their young people's concerts to approximately, I think the number is 200,000 kids a year. I know the Guthrie has about 150,000 to 200,000 school-age kids a year who attend performances of one sort or another for free. And if they are receiving $565,000 or $419,000 over and above the other good works that these organizations do, I think it's a bargain for the state.
Okay, members, I have Representative Norris and Representative Kelleher, but now I have an amendment to the amendment that I believe Representative Earhart wishes to offer. So I guess, Representative Norris, do you want to speak now, or do you want to wait till Representative Earhart offers his amendment to his amendment?
I just soon go now.
All right, Representative Norris.
Okay. Just to address the original vote that we're faced with, I think it puts most of us in an awkward position, because on the list here, most of us, I think, agree that these are all fine causes and well worthy of funding. But I agree with Representative Abrams that this is a terrible way to do it. And I just have to express, although I support these folks individually, I have to vote no on this amendment.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, if you could, I'd be happy to wait till after the Earhart Amendment is offered, and if you could put me on the list after that's offered, thank you.
Okay. Representative Earhart moves his handwritten amendment. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a correction on the underlying, the last three lines are underlined, and it should be that holds, except a public radio station that instead of the.
All right, Representative Earhart, we'll incorporate that into your handwritten amendment.
All right.
Can you explain your handwritten amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I handed out previously a typed page showing the various percentages and what they would generate for each of those, you know, fish and wildlife, clean water, parks and trails with a breakdown, arts and humanities with a breakdown. Now, this amendment would change those percentages. You can see where we started and what somebody might be doing with their adding machine or their calculator is figuring out exactly what the changes we're suggesting here would be in dollars. If anybody has done that yet, Representative Osmond, do you have the figures you were working on?
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart. I believe that the 28 is, assuming that your total that you have on the handout that you sent around is $276.87 million. That it would be $77.5 million would be 29%, and the 16% would be 44.29. I believe that's accurate. the Representative Earhart, my only comment would be that knowing that, that if you would put that 28 at 29 and the 16 at 15, you would then have the $80 million for the clean water that I believe we've all been trying to accomplish.
Well, that's the reason, Mr. Chairman, that we put forth this. There was some a lot of interest in clean water, and we were trying to help out the clean water folks. I don't know who knew we were going to be voting on this, Mr. Chairman. I had two phone calls at 8 and 8:05 to tell me to vote for clean water, and I said I didn't even know we were voting on it today, but then Representative Osman came back on the scene, so I can see what's happening here.
Representative Solberg.
Has he incorporated those changes suggested by Representative Osman?
Did you make the decision?
Representative Osman.
Mr. Representative Earhart, I made the comment that instead of inserting 28%, if you inserted 29% on line 15,
yeah,
and on line 18, if you inserted 15% rather than 16,
okay,
I believe we would then have the $80 million that we're looking for clean water.
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, since Representative Osman has the calculator, I will accept his suggestion to incorporate those two changes in the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, Representative Earhart incorporates the change that now on the handwritten amendment, page 1, line 15, delete 22, insert 29%, page 1, line 18, delete 22, insert 15%. Representative Earhart, are you finished with your discussion?
I think, Mr. Chairman, that we ought to take a whirl at, you know, we talk about the growth in the economy here. We're talking this doesn't take place for a couple more next biennium, and we're looking at $276 million, which is certainly going to be there with two more years of growth in our economy. And if we don't put it to good use, we certainly will find some other way of spending it. So this whole list of folks out there waiting for a vote on this is, and then their vote, if they like the idea, would be most happy. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, well, I'll speak to the Earhart Amendment. I think it's I actually had a different comment to make. I'll make that first. I believe that in the bill itself, none of this money can be used for administrative costs. If you look at page 8, line 12,
right.
So the issues about compensation of these folks, I think Representative Abrams did a nice job talking about the competitive nature of some of these particular jobs, and that we are definitely not competing against each other in this state, but we are competing globally for these folks to come and run our museums and run our institutions. To the Earhart Amendment, I do think Representative Earhart accepting Representative Osman's amendment is very important in terms of the funding for water here, and I also believe that, actually I'll speak to the piece about inserting science. I believe that if we do that up front, unlike the State Arts Board, which has a process to distribute through a competitive process, this will make sure that the foresight of making sure if there are other institutions that do science education broader than the Minnesota Science Museum could possibly be included someday in this. So I think there are other smaller institutions that do a fine job. I would cite the Bell Museum and the Bakken Museum as two of them, and I want to make sure that when we are lagging in science education, I know it's an issue that the other side of the aisle cares about too, that we are broadly defining this issue in terms of how we define natural science, physics, and other things. So that I appreciate that being in there.
Okay. To the Earhart handwritten amendment, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, just a clarification question, since I'm not as familiar with the public radio station. So your added language from page 8, line 3, your exception clause that you're looking to add, who would that cover?
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that would cover NPR.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart. I don't sit on the committee. I haven't been really following a lot of the debate as it relates to the public radio stations. Just curious on just your exception of wondering why just this particular radio station.
Representative Earhart.
I didn't hear the question.
Why this particular radio station?
I have no idea. Somebody handed me this.
Representative Earhart, just to be clear, so as I understand it, the amendment would say that this funding would not be available for NPR. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I think that's correct.
Representative Riccovino.
Sure, I think Representative Earhart will take care of all the other stations. Like, you have a public radio station, Representative Walker, in Minneapolis, and we have one at KUMD, and there's one up at Grand Rapids at KXD, and those used to be called Minnesota Public Independent Radio.
That's the whole
they have a new name now. All of those stations would get funding, but NPR wouldn't, because everybody's worried about how much money the guy that runs it makes.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to Representative Mariani, but members, we do have session at noon, and I certainly want to at least get the votes that we have under discussion here done by noon. Representative Mariani.
Mr.
The Earhart written amendment.
Mr. Chair, my comments were also on the last section. I wanted some clarity on that. And my understanding is that Representative Earhart, that does mean that the other smaller radio stations around the state would then divvy up the rest of that, that pool.
Representative, I'm sorry. Okay, to the Earhart handwritten amendment. Any other discussion? Representative Earhart.
I'd just like to have a roll call on this, please.
A roll call, okay. Roll call has been requested on the Earhart handwritten amendment. Any other discussion while we're getting that prepared? This is on the handwritten amendment. Yes. The handwritten amendment that increases the funding for clean water, decreases the funding for arts, humanities, history museums, etc. And then the other items in the amendment. Representative Bradley.
But couldn't Representative Earhart just have incorporated that?
Well, I thought about that, Representative Bradley, and given that the Earhart amendment, the A2 amendment, had failed before, and then we reconsidered it and brought it up, I'm not sure if it would be proper for us to then have him incorporate it under these circumstances. I'm not sure. Seeing no further discussion, let's take the vote on the Earhart amendment.
Tom Black?
Yes.
MC?
Yes.
Ebler? Abrams?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Beard?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Diskins?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Norman?
Yes.
Dorn?
Yes.
Earhart?
Yes.
Bradley? Gunther?
Yes.
Hamill?
Yes.
Dilty?
Yes.
Holbert?
Yes.
Huntley? Kelleher?
Yes.
Quinzing?
Yes.
Brinke?
No.
Larson?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
Yes.
Nornan?
Yes.
Wachemba?
Yes.
Osment?
Yes.
Hamer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Bruce?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Silbert?
Yes.
Sikora?
Yes.
Vanderveer?
No.
Wagenius? Walker?
Yes.
There being 33 ayes and 2 nays, the Earhart handwritten amendment is adopted. All right, members, now we have the A2 amendment with the Earhart language in it before us. Representative Earhart, then Cranky.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a roll call. I don't know if that's been done on this.
Yes, we do have a roll call already asked for.
Thank you.
Representative Cranky.
Could we get some information about the total amount of money? You know, this is a 25-year constitutional dedication. Could fiscal staff give us some estimates as to what the total amount of money that would be appropriated under this amendment for these various categories?
Mr. Mark, can you give us some information on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cranky, we don't have good numbers for fiscal 2010 when this would take effect, but for fiscal 2009, the total number is estimated to be $276,900,000.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering about what there might be for 2030.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cranky, we don't know. Where does the sales tax percent go?
So,
Representative Cranky.
Mr. Chairman, members, we have no idea. Not even probably a glimmer of what the amount of money that we're dedicating to these various funds over 25 years. Looking around the room, wondering if any member of the, might be here in 25 years, but
Hamilton will be here.
So the idea that we are going to set in the Constitution percentages of sales tax receipts when we have absolutely no idea how much money this might generate for these various things, I think the word ludicrous comes to mind, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman? Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman and members, I kind of gave some of this speech in the Tax Committee, and I think that you all ought to be subjected to it. if you're going to put a constitutional dedication of the sales tax in the Constitution, one of the necessary unintended consequences is that you are now creating large groups who are going to be in favor of changing the sales tax base. Remember in 2001 when former Governor Ventura wanted to extend sales tax to all sorts of services? There's always the idea to increase the sales tax to clothing, and there are other sales tax base extenders. If you vote for the Earhart Amendment, or if you vote for the Hackbarth Amendment, when the bill comes up for final passage, understand that every sportsman group, every arts organization, every environmentalist, everybody who is listed, anybody who likes trails, whenever you try to narrow the sales tax base, they're going to say, you're taking money away from the environment. And whenever you expand, and they will be lobbying you to expand the sales tax base in the name of reform. And you are enshrining this in the Constitution for 25 years. Now, I may be a very lonely voice on this, but I think that if you spend some time and consider it, you will understand that this is a very, very dangerous road we are going by. We are going to be freeze-drying in our Constitution the sales tax as it's currently constituted and then some for over a generation. And I just think it's a bad idea.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we are not doing this. The voters will be doing it. So I would say, let's let the voters decide.
Well, yeah, there is a roll call on this. You know, Representative Earhart, just to that point, I would say, I've always felt that, you know, the process we have to adopt constitutional amendments in this state is that we as the legislature consider whether we think it's a good idea, and then we cast our vote. And then if we think it's a good idea, then we give it to the public for a vote. And I think that we should be exercising our collective judgments, whatever they may be, on a question before us, instead of just turning it over to the public.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to offend you, but that's a very elitist Republican idea, so.
That's the process we have, Representative Earhart. Representative Dorman.
Chair Knobloch, I think there's another way we can go about some of these things, too. We can actually show leadership and say, if we want to spend money on these programs, we'll actually raise the money and then go spend it, as opposed to try to spend it and take the credit for the spending and then worry about the consequences of the hole in the general fund or the transportation fund 5 or 6 years down the line. I know that's kind of a crazy concept. It's easier to say, boy, I'm scared to vote for a tax increase, so I'm going to let the voters do it. But that is another option I think we have, too.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Earhart A2 amendment as amended.
Knobloch?
No.
Dempsey?
No.
Abler? Abrams?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
No.
Bradley?
No.
Iskins?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Bart?
Yes.
Dorman?
Yes.
Doran?
Yes.
Earhart?
Yes.
Grayling?
Yes.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Hobart?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Quinzing?
No.
Grinke?
No.
Larson?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Nornis?
No.
Otremba? Osment?
Yes.
Hamer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Bruce?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Smith?
Yes.
Silbert?
Yes.
Sikora?
No.
Vandeveer?
No.
Virginius?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
Oh, we've got our money in there for the union. He ended up voting for the union.
Oh, fine.
There being 20 ayes and 17 nays, the A2 amendment is adopted. And with that, members, we are in recess till after session. I'll make an announcement on the floor as to the time.
Can we leave your stuff here?
You can leave your stuff here. Members, I'm going to reconvene the meeting. We had Senate file 2734 before us when we left. We're going to take that up again. Members, are there any other amendments? See no other amendments. Discussion to the bill as amended. Any discussion to Senate file 2734 as amended? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this have a roll call attached to it yet or no?
Representative Earhart, we don't have a roll call on it right now. I'm sure that if someone doesn't like the way the chair calls the vote, that someone will ask for a division.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay. All right, Representative Hackbar, our discussion to the bill. Any discussion to the bill? Okay, members, then the chair will remove his motion that Senate File 2734, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Rules. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And with that, members, unless anyone has anything else, I'll tell you we do not have any meeting plans for tomorrow. We will certainly be meeting next week to do omnibus bills. We'll give you a schedule once we know more details on that. Representative Solberg.
Yeah.
It is helpful to members, particularly in rural Minnesota, if you can give us a fairly lengthy notice. Are you planning on meeting any time on Tuesday? Is it Tuesday we come back?
We do come back Tuesday at noon. I think we have session at noon that day, is that right? We have session at noon on Tuesday.
So there will not be anything before that?
There will not be anything before noon.
Mr. Chair, my only request would be then is if you schedule a meeting, like after session, I would hope that you'd allow the DFL members, please, means to have time to talk this. You've been very kind in
that. Well, I certainly will. I think there's a good likelihood that we will have a meeting sometime on Tuesday afternoon or evening, probably Tuesday afternoon. We would need to meet as a Republican caucus to talk about bills, too. I'm not, you know, sure what we would be taking up, but I just expect that next week we're going to have a lot of finance bills to do, and so we'll probably be wanting to get started on them.
Okay, it would be important if we can have that scheduled as soon as possible. That's very kind of
you. Oh, sure. Representative Carlson.
A couple of us on the way over after we adjourned were talking about the omnibus bills and how they're going to be matched up. Do you have any idea yet what's going to happen?
Representative Carlson, I think the answer to that is that I do not yet have an answer for you on that.
We'd appreciate knowing what maybe is going to happen.
When I know what's going to happen, I'll tell you.
I understand that, yeah, but I was just saying it would be helpful to know what.
Sure.
What's down the road in regard to that.
All right, sounds good. Any other discussion? Seeing none, meeting's adjourned.